Hello, I'm James Hanzik.
And this is Patrick Bocard, and you are listening to Talking Earth. I'm subbing for Barbara Lamorticella, who will be back, I believe, October 15th. But tonight I'm here with James Hanzik, who reads around town as an artist, poet, photographer. You were a musician at one point. Do you still consider yourself a musician, James?
I do experimental music. I take sounds, break them apart, and stick them back together. I'm not sure if that's music or not, but I like to do it.
Basically, you're a Renaissance man. And later on, pretty soon, actually, we will have the Buffalo Poets.
Yes, from New York City and all over the United States. Some good poets. They have great work. You'll get a chance to hear some of their stuff. And I'm going to start out. I'm going to read my bio just for fun. I studied poetry under John Yao, Bernadette Meyer, and David Trinidad at the Poetry Project in New York at St. Mark's Church, which is the heart of poetry in New York City, with Charles Bernstein at the New School. I've lived in Wisconsin, New York City, New Orleans, and I'm here. I've been in Portland for about 4 years. I perform my work at La Mama, New Yorkers Poets Cafe, CBGB's, lots of other places in New York City, on the West Coast, down at Big Sur, down in San Francisco, up in Seattle, here in Portland, and in the Black Rock Desert in Nevada. So I'm going to start out with a couple of New Orleans pieces. The great American tragedy, the Bush administration, one of the cities that is the heart and soul of American culture, the best food in the United States, and jazz, a part of our American cultural heritage, has such strong roots in New York, a city of wonderful people with rich feelings. With its own little media that isn't exactly tied into the rest of the United States. But anyway, I'm going to try to let the poems speak for themselves. When I used to work with the old black men in the mailroom at Tulane, they used to say, "Where are we at, James? What you eating?" I would articulate "New Orleans," say "poor boy" in my Midwestern flat speak. They'd laugh at me, make me say it right. Pobo, New Orleans. Every morning I would wake up to the mockingbird out my window, take the St. Charles streetcar into work. Sundays I would go down to the corner of Decatur and Frenchman, buy some crawdads and boiled potatoes and a beer. Some guy would make it on a big pot on the street corner, go sit on the levee, eating my meal, sucking the last bit of good crawfish out the head. I'd hang there with this friend, an old man who's from California, who came back to try to get the papers for his mother's house that had fallen into possession of some crooked lawyer. He'd be fishing, just waiting for those wheels of justice to turn his way. We would watch the ship slide around Algiers Point in the big, strong, muddy, almost out of control except for the skills of the pilot. Man, that place. I went to some of the wildest parties there, where two bars would be having bands, and on a hot Saturday night, they'd just get tired of playing inside and walk out in the street. The whole street would be full of people, drinking and smoking and shaking it. It would look like a wild musical second-line brass band backstreet riot had broken out. The cops wouldn't do shit. This would go on way past midnight. And just thinking about New Orleans, what I would give now for an oyster po' boy right now from Johnny's, dressed. And seeing Coco Robichaux play in a sweaty room, peeling paint on old wooden walls, oak trees, termites swarming around the street lamps at night, the suits, gutter punks and stone drunks, the waitresses in their 30s with wrinkles around their eyes, some good used bookstores, a coffee house or two, the pastel colors of the thick air at dusk. an old man dressed for church, stooped over with hunched back, walking on St. Charles outside of the Woolworths, where I cash my checks. He sings a little gospel riff over and over. You go into the Salvation Army store trying to buy a suit, and a lanky, long-limbed man in a black suit is in the back playing ragtime on a broken-down piano. It's like New Orleans was sleeping, dreaming itself into existence. At the Hummingbird Cafe, if you went in and sat at the counter with a tape recorder, you could write a play a night. All the stories, all the talking, everybody knew it. One of them even told me it, but they just don't do it. But, you know, after a hot summer day, sometimes it got really quiet for a bit. The buildings are glowing in this backlit murder twilight, and the thick air is so still that you could almost hear Buddy Bolden playing his trumpet for the paddle wheelers that came in. They say you could hear him all the way to the fairgrounds, his tone so clear and strong, before he went mad, disappeared. Makes me wonder, what shit did he see that sent him upriver to the asylum? But here, now, I can hear the gospel band singing at the fairgrounds at Jazz Fest. I'd be eating gumbo with Andalou sausage, pheasant, and quail, eating in these hot flavors, and the music going on, and the chorus would be singing, and the preacher would be preaching, and we're all swaying back and forth, and I feel like I could be saved. Okay, that's my first New Orleans piece, and this is about leaving New Orleans, going back to Milwaukee on Greyhound bus. You take the Greyhound bus, you kind of see the underbelly of America, the people lost, you know, the people struggling. It's not like flying, but anyway, here goes. Yeah. In the response of the mockingbird, I could find no connection. Oh my, oh my. The road from New Orleans to Jackson, to Tupelo, to Memphis, to Chicago, north to Wisconsin. All secret dreams concealed and revealed. In rolled up blankets, packages tied with string. Cardboard boxes stuffed with duct tape. Overstuffed hefty bags. Unmatched Salvation Army luggage. You just clutch your ticket, be glad if you have a destination. The guy collecting cans asks me for spare change everywhere I go. I'm sitting on the cold and hard plastic seats under the cold and hard fluorescent light. 50 cents, I'll get you a play in the pinball machine. There's a pregnant woman traveling alone, and she's shuffling through some papers in her purse, looking for a dollar she hopes she might have lost to spend. As ex-cons whisper through thin lips to sailors on leave, and among kids with heavy metal t-shirts eat cold cups wrapped in plastic under the arrivals and departures sign. I drink whiskey in the back seats out of a past half point, get out at the stops and smoke. You know, I watched all day for junkyards, beauty salons, fishing tackle supplier, home cooking, juke joints, people sitting on the porches waiting for the bus to go by. I look for the old America, and sometimes I can see it, but in the 4 a.m. twilight ride through the furtive sleep and dreams, the miles are just an endless stream of strip malls and chain stores with duplicated facades preaching an infinite echolalic neon text, chanting exile in aluminum and plastic as the diesel engine thrums spasmodic clockwork sleep.
Buddy Bolden,
okay, no,
the Greyhound, and now we have the rest of the world, I believe.
Okay, are you on the line, Buffalo?
Oh yeah, hey.
Very good, very good. Let me give an introduction. These are my friends, the Buffalo poets from New York City, Michael Franklin, who's from Portland and St. Louis, and Noel Levin, Roger Kenny, David Acevedo, and Michael Franklin, and they're going to read some of their stuff for us.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
Is this Michael right now? Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, right. Sorry, this is Noah Levin speaking, and also on the phone with me is Mr. King Otho.
How you doing, Moose? Buffalo.
Buffalo
everybody.
Moose. Good to hear from you guys.
Moose James. Excellent. Yeah.
great. Unfortunately, Dave couldn't make it today. He's homesick, but really great reading and great to hear my voice projected over 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
I'm full of enough caffeine at this point to probably drive a truck by itself.
It's like 1 in the morning there, isn't it?
It is.
Very good. I want you guys to drive that truck over those telephone wires and break out into the airwaves for us here. So what you have for us?
Melding and meshing over the network that is around us. And don't forget whiskey. Lots of whiskey would be up to play.
Yeah. So as James was mentioning, we are the Buffalo Readings. We've been doing this a couple of years. We're always honored to be affiliated with James, who, God bless him, he kept me alive on a trip down to Big Sur.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And, we got poets throughout the country, and we've been doing this in New York City for a couple of years. We hadn't really coordinated ourselves. Otho, did you want to start with a poem, or do you want me to take lead?
Well, I actually got a new piece that I'd like to read.
Please, I'll sit back then.
Is actually Michael Franklin on with us?
No, I thought. We're gonna get him on later. Maybe
I can take care of that.
Yeah.
If you guys start reading, we're gonna hook him up from this end.
But Michael Franklin's also an awesome poet who claims Buffalo now and again. And I just wanted to introduce the Buffalo a little bit to people who don't know. We're New York City. Founded reading series, quite a group of poets who were fed up with the poetry scene around us, and came, first reading in 2002, very early, and have had hundreds of readings in crazy abandoned buildings with no heat and no electricity throughout
That's
the last
true.
6 years, and also big venues and small venues and huge venues and all kinds of places all across the country. I have a brand new piece here. This is called New Krang. And I am King Otho once again. Thanks for having us on. And James, awesome to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Yes.
Yeah, great pieces, by the way. Those, awesome New Orleans pieces. I just heard that first one recently, and every single word is beautiful.
Thank you.
New Krang. From the convenience of your western tears comes one who looks for those lonesome ears, comes one, come sky, come home and moan, and not to connight, grag night, comes wandering those thickly painted hallway ceilings of blue-gray Sunday afternoon loneliness, crackled the picture box, long speaker wire wrapped long ago wire hanger, whose pillow night caught fire, whose brown and wind and more soulsome tears, a holographic diorama of the times I might remember when puppet family in carpeted dollhouse kabuki mask angst and bumblebee mark screamed on the wind of the panes of the glass time whose of time is used time and a look a come along and Sunday morning news time. Cartoon fingertips releases plastic button and red-eyed channel disfigures its figure and before the flip its mind's eye laugh around couch and table and ear-held writergram. Monthly paycheck wrinkles. Who knew how so it was, so meaningless tantra of the 37th time when the spring has become limp and the mind-hollow messenger comes to this mind limp when the limp becomes limp and yet it was always limp and yet it was always not limp. And then there was Tuesday when it was like madness in a dark, tight tunnel breathes heavy with wandering souls. Each scrape off a bit, and the path becomes tighter, becomes cramped and pressed-faced features, and the package was wrapped in life, and the gold was its bones, and the wind was its blood, and the distance was its energy, and the planets were its memories, and the comets its kidneys, and the water its euphoria, and the fire was its intellect, and the gravity was its schedule, and the dust was its senses, and the clouds were its songs, and the music was its meat, and the wine was its potatoes, and the rhythm was its lesson, and the light was its goal. Oh, agony! Oh, mysterious backbone we call being! Oh, the cheese of cities! Oh, the lambs of concertos! Oh, the end-all-be-all original hairball of slut! Take these crimes and hold them to you dear, for your Wednesdays depend on them, for your crackers do shift, for your spread does not shift, and you are lonely, and the only one you are.
Whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Whoosh. Fantastic.
Yeah, brand new piece.
Good.
People listening don't know what's going on. Buffalo say moose. You just have to accept it.
That's true. And sometimes we just say buffalo.
Moose.
See, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
So no, I you know, once again, guys, you know, it's kind of crazy, just all sitting in rooms all around the place with phones in ears and stuff like that. So, like Noah. You know, be my guest, please. Take over.
Oh, absolutely. I've waited my whole life to do a poetry reading from my sofa.
Yeah. I kind of like. I like to do it on this.
Visiting ambassadors, feel free. Stop by. Help yourself to my fridge.
And
that's called My Late Neighbors Now Love Me at 1 a.m. Blues. This is called Fairy Tale of Reality.
Yeah, moose.
Pages told as childhood goes, imagination was adrift, forever tomorrow like eternal timeline drawn in sand, dared across attitude the only challenge to face. Fairy tale reality was truth and future, possibilities roamed free as mind, but the clock ticked and secretly stole from flesh. Clock bleeds with each stroke as crush of hand became harder to bear. Chapter piled upon chapter, but wish dream could still be reality as mind still sailed on open sea. Tick-tock goes mind. Tick. 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 Tick goes wasted effort. Tock goes more to dream. Onward. Onward. But the hand on the clock welcomed in new reality. Stronger reality as bled dreams fell from clock. Pages ripped asunder, floating in sea of lost dreams. Slowly dripping, dripping. The wheel of reality crushed mind, gears grind, clock ticks, system in place. The book was a lie. Reality was set in stone and ambition adrift. The clock bleeds until sea of dreams claims souls and ship of hope is fool's way out. Book under arm, book held high. Staring at clock, I see it was created by a thousand minds. Shriveled reality imagined into thoughts ticking together. Nightmares born to regulate and steal souls to keep mass weathered flesh together. Arms were, pace set in stone, movement still forward, eyesight stolen, gray is the only normality. Wither in flesh, wither in mind, clockwork patter, it was all still written. Soul sucked into time construct to strengthen the dreary many. Time pace, time lags behind in march, down road conquering high. A shout is heard. All hands to the ship. Control the wheel. Set course. Set sail. Set mind. Set depth. Set heels in place. Mutiny your own destiny. Sail on through the clock. Shatter the arms in mirrored parts until shattered gears stand at odds. The parts lay in waste and tick-tock will not wince. Chapters still pile high, weighing down the sharpened mind creates new weave. Supposed ship adrift is now at helm, and book under arm remains guide to dreams. Sail on now with clock in proper places, northern star and sky above, and withered mind no longer toll to pay. Sail on! Sail on!
Whoosh!
Moose!
Moose! Moose!
Buffalo!
Awesome!
Thank
awesome.
You.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful work.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is.
I'd like to thank the makers of all of that caffeine I consumed in the last hour for that.
beautiful, just beautiful work. Now I got some for you guys. Now I've got a poem that's like an experimental poem. I probably wrote it at Bernadette's Myers class at St. Mark's Church. And I figure it's a sestina, except I twisted and broke it apart, as I do with a lot of my writing. And I was thinking, so it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 parts. You know, they're like each 6 lines. Anyway, I figured I would read a part, and you guys would like grab something you have, you know, just like grab out a line and pull something, you know, at random, or say something, you know, as like a kind of a call and response. You guys up for it?
Got it, man.
Sure. Like, yeah.
Okay. So as I said, 6 parts. I'll read something, and you guys read something. I'll read something, and we'll go back and forth. And let's be spontaneous madness. Here goes.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. Half following a chant, allowing in naked flare and necked night fall of mouth moth pale nude weld arcs bell wire.
The water laughs in my mind as in bliss. Suddenly surrendered into the serenity of the moment, the time upon eternal, because I'm continually stuck in the present.
Come with night, blind wire in whole mouth, tongue, nerve, weld, mind naked, impelled in chant.
They dart Think. Off without a second glance, lonely protoplasm in high heels, straight black hair, barely shimmering smells like burning oak far off fire.
Through vigilar mouth, each a chant would weld metallic naked move to wire geometries of night.
Think, goes the drip in my brain. But you don't care, neither should I, when my problems are left amongst the sea of a thousand, all thinking and tripping their ills and their ooze out upon the puddle on the plain.
Would forever weld another night cell illuminated naked and reeling wire exact after chant fold of mouth.
AOL, time warner slopping in shit, it's thought money, dry in the veins of structured reason, Poland-sized ice chunks fall into southern sea.
Chords more naked, held desperate mouth, towards wire exact after chant attached to night, how I am welled.
Transferred to another train, I was preached Jesus as the gospel was passed with a change cup and we ignored as the broken boy rode the other train into oblivion, forgotten.
How wire wounds weld assassin chant to fits of night without mouth and pocket naked.
We are a nation of ghosts. We are a universe of ghosts existing to experience the nature of itself forever.
Whoa, wow, awesome. Thank you.
Right on.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, y'all couldn't see me frantically flipping randomly through poetry.
Me as well. And at 1:26 a.m., no way.
This is when the brilliance comes out.
Random lines and a look of alarm goes across my eyes as I coolly say, oh, yeah.
No other way to do it.
Oh, good. And I'm going to ramble on here with this is an old piece I wrote in New York. It's a list poem. I wrote a list. I think it was for a class. It said write a list poem. A poet in New York City just went to the grocery store, brought bacon, Durkee's hot sauce, grated Romano cheese, and garlic powder. At the discount store, he bought razor blades, 2 plates, and ice cube trays. He came back home to the squat he lives in, made eggs with green pepper, bacon, cheese on top, and spices, after which he returned to his typewriter to write the soon-to-be-renowned epic poem in which he reconciled himself with all the problems in his life, cleared up the misunderstandings, attained new states of human knowledge and wisdom, and simultaneously spoke of Margaret's red hair against the forge light, shook almost, but not in beat with, the sound of hammers on hot steel.
Mm. Yeah. Buffalo.
Yeah. Very, very good.
Bruce Moose.
And do we have Michael Franklin on the air?
Unfortunately, no. I'm going to see if I can try to have him on the next show, if he's going to be amenable to that. But yeah, he's not actually home. It kind of was a spur-of-the-moment thing, I think. And he's actually with his friends who just showed up and are in a band.
All right. So, Noah, do you want to read something new, Roger?
I have a
piece if you'd like to hear it.
Go for it.
We don't get to hear you guys very often.
This is a piece that has been read before, and you all probably heard it. Well, some of you all have already heard it, but it's a good piece, and so I'll read it here now. Cool. Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. And this sounds great with the jazz band, we found out.
Yeah, I hear you guys have been playing with a jazz band you found in Tompkins Square Park in NYC.
Yeah, that's Callahan, who's a fellow Buffalo and a former West Coast poet as well. Actually, we originally found him out on the West Coast. He was down at Tompkins and saw these cats who they call themselves Flip. And really great jazz musicians, and he invited them down to our poetry reading, and not knowing anything about us, they actually showed up, which gives them absolute credibility, and of course they showed up not expecting much, but instead we all really became a mutual admiration society, and we've done two or three gigs with them, and they're just fantastic. And in fact, speaking of Michael Molotov, if... we've been doing some posting monthly on the Oxford University Press blog, and if you go there and look up Buffalo Poets, go to blog.oup.com, and if you go there and look up Buffalo Poets, you'll see our most recent post is actually a video of Michael Franklin reading with those same jazz cats from the first gig we did.
Oh, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's yeah. he just takes
like there. They really complimented each other quite well.
Oh, it's perfect, and you would think that it was rehearsed, and it's very much not. Nobody knew what the other person was about, and we all just went for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so more poetry. Okay.
Yeah, let me stop getting in the way.
your poetry. Go, I want to hear it.
Here we go. This is called Thank You, John. Visions of destiny, deja vu. Visions of death, deja vu. Impure thought machine, deja vu, and strength of spirit, oneness with Jesus, shadow face, deja vu. John remembers, he heard it on the radio, the last time the wave broke, deja vu. The war has come, the fury of men ignites, insanity chaotic ensues, deja. The big stick stirs the shit, and softly spoken men laugh and profit, deja vu. Bones blown, bodily harm, brown people held down, Republicans freed the slaves, Americans piled naked Iraq, while we steal their oil behind their back, deja vu. But machines, however impure, are each capable of knowing truth, heaven, deja vu. And thoughts in time do come, deja vu. And Fogarty knows some things, about what and how worlds can change from peace and love to death in vain, deja vu. From smoking pot to suit-stained cocaine, and how vicious slaves to money became, deja vu. But no heaven exists. But in this mind, empty space, and empty mind space are all alike, deja vu. Maybe heaven isn't a place you can go, but a place you can make. When mind finds it within, it just might leak out, deja vu. The way of heaven is profit without destruction, deja vu. The Tao of heaven, and in this world, mind is true, deja vu.
Beautiful, beautiful. You ran the meters into the red here at this end.
Oh,
and that's where we want our poetry,
James,
in the red zone.
Yeah, actually, everyone has been doing that.
Well, you know, that's how you know it's good.
Yes. The show's really hot.
Okay, Noah, you got something? You got something more for us?
Absolutely. Here's a piece. This is called Snake Oil. A ticket to a show we all believe, but the veil has been sewn by our hands, which fumble to remove a creation we deny. The weary eye has been provided a view shaped in colored hues, but the tint is nothing more than the eye candy my dime can buy. We are fed the meal we asked for. We are talked to in tones of apathy. My soul is tortured by the fluff that has manipulated our time. But what's going on? What's going on? Mercy, mercy me, what's going on? I turn on the news to hear the word, but I'm misled by what it has to say. I've been told to lie down, but I can only stand. America! America, why have you gone to sleep? You great slumbering giant America, why has the lullaby caught your ear? Awaken! To arms, America, to arms! Do not buy the product that has been sold from every view. Do not buy the lies that are sold to be our truth. We are the vested commercial audience and we applaud on cue. Everyone has something to sell, from the left to the right to the moderate to the liberal to the conservative. Lies, lies, all twisted lies. Listen closely and you will hear. Dig deeply and you will find. Look for the truth. It can be found. To arms, to knowledge, to the fight. America, be all you can be and judge for yourself, but do not listen to me simply because I've told you to do so.
All right, all right. Good, strong, 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 strong work from you guys. Very, very good, very good. I got something here. You know, Noah, you still do you have still have that harp in your hand there?
I do.
I got a piece I wrote in Spanish. I write in Spanish once in a while. I'm not the greatest writer in Spanish, but it helps me to say some things I can't say in English. Anyway, I was thinking I'd read a line of this and you'd play a little harp and I'd read another line and see how that works. Does that sound good?
That sounds absolutely great. Just as a warning on my end, the sound sometimes drops when I'm talking. So just yell out at me.
yeah. Okay.
All right, man, hit me.
Yeah. Estoy pensando en ti en estos momentos. No estoy dado por esta ciudad. La única luz es un gutero morado debajo de autos negros. Los únicos sonidos son las risas negras sin fin. The black laughs without end. Nuestras canciones son los regalos de la máquina. Our songs, the gift of a machine. Whoa, 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 whoa. Mirar a los ojos es difícil, hablar prohibido. La luna encadenada sangrando, the moon has fallen bleeding, the moon has fallen bleeding. La luna encadenada sangrando. Hace un tiempo conocí un hombre con música de crom y piel y tacto of touch and steel. Oír fue con fue como estar en el desierto con un moro que sabe todos los nombres de las estrellas. Aldebrán. El paritario de las Pleiades, Nari el Zeruc, el luminoso del barco, el Rish el Nudo, Rastaban, Cabeza de Dragón. Todos los nombres son parte del corazón trágico de la civilización. Y mira, la luna ha caído al mar amargo. The moon has fallen in the bitter sea. It's about a friend who died, was murdered. Go on. Choo-choo-choo-choo. Ella estaba sentada en los escalones con un mujer y su niño de 2 años. Me recuerdo que él me decía que quería ser la primera mujer preñada por la luna. Go. Keep going. Joven, negro, enciente. Un rocket, fuego de alquitrán. Pasaje, sin aire y luminoso.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank
you. Ah, wonderful, man.
Yeah. All right, very good, very good.
Very nice, man.
Yeah, so I think we can let you guys go to sleep now if you want to
sleep. What's
well, I'm probably secretly I'm probably going to stay up a bit and listen to the rest of the show.
Oh, very good.
You know, man,
I can leave you on the line and you can you'll be able to listen if you want to do that. Would that work?
sorry, what?
I can leave you on the line so you can listen and all that. That's cool.
Oh, sure. That would be great.
Yeah, I might even... I mean, I could just leave you guys on the air, too, if you want to comment on everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll do that.
Sure.
Do you really want to know what we're thinking?
Why, yes.
Sure. It's always...
there's FCC guidelines and all that, you know.
There are some, but you haven't broken any yet.
Beautiful.
Well,
they change with the hour, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's like alternate side of the street parking.
I'm gonna read a short story. You know, and I lived in New York from '86 to '96, and I saw good things, but I saw some really bad things. I mean, you know what it was like then. It was the AIDS was big, and the crack epidemic was very big, and the murder rate was very, very high in New York. And I have such mixed feelings about my existence there. And I wrote this story about it. I call it The God of New York. And, you know, and I know things are changed. They're different now. Things are better. I think people's lives are better. But I wrote this story. You know, it took a long time to write. It was tough. I got help with this, Ben Archer and Walt Curtis, so my good friend, the honored citizen Walt Curtis, helped me in editing this. Of course, after he gave me his edits, he said I didn't do what he exactly wanted me to do. But anyway, I'm gonna read this story. God of New York. When I first lived in Manhattan, I used to hang out at a bar on the Lower East Side or the East Village or whatever you want to call it. The place was on First Avenue between 9th and 10th Street and was called Downtown Beirut. It was a dump, it was a dive, a hole in the wall, a long and narrow shotgun shack, just wide enough for the bar, bathroom in the back, one pinball machine, a video game, and a jukebox. Looming over the patrons, attached to the ceiling, was a huge papier-mâché effigy, 6 foot head, with hands extended, a gray apparition flying through the bar. Everyone called it God. Downtown Beirut was owned by a neighborhood Polish family. The matriarch of the family, in her 70s, would on occasion show up and look as strange as everyone else, conferring with the bartenders, counting receipts in the back room. I don't think they trusted their staff. When I first started going there, against the back of the bar was a classic liquor rack, from lower tier to upper tier, from bottom shelf to top shelf, a panorama of bottles backed up by a wall-to-wall mirror. It had been a display of Bukowskian beauty, but the owners, believing the bartenders had been dispensing a too liberal supply of buybacks, had purchased a machine that hooked up every bottle into a glass and plastic computerized octopus. The snake tube snaked from the bottles to the liquor dispenser, like the IV drips in Frankenstein's hospital. Downtown Beirut was next door to the Village Idiot, which had a clientele worthy of its name. You'd open the door, you'd see a crowd of people standing in a circle around a big-haired, curly-haired, wild-eyed hippie who had a quirk to his lips. They'd be chanting, chug, 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 I never went there. Beirut had a better class of customers. The regulars were an interesting mix of Lower East Side characters. There was an old painter who came in and locked himself to the pinball machine and was said to have studied under Hans Hoffmann. There was a tall creature from Belize who was a nurse and nursed her drink silently at the bar. I always thought she really was a woman, but everyone said she was a he, but no matter. She never spoke much, smiled into her drink. When I got my ear pierced, she noticed. Smiling, without saying anything, she gave me one of her earrings. There was a midget named Manny who fell in love with every woman who came into the bar. There was a musician from Texas who was heading his way downhill, made his living walking in front of cars. Every time I saw him, he limped more and more. He caught AIDS, ended up infecting his girlfriend. Two Satanist auto mechanics, one who was most proud of that the lines on his hand made a natural pentagram. He would tell the story of how he showed his hand to a fortune teller and her jaw dropped in shock. One of the bartenders, mustached and tough, played in a rockabilly band. Carolyn, the chief bartender, had green hair, played in a punk band. Gigi Allen had covered her band's song Beer Picnic. She was smart, had been on Jeopardy, and came in second. When she was on Jeopardy, we all sat around the bar and watched her. There was a tough, cute girl from Brooklyn named Sherry, a couple of artists from Canada, musicians, painters, losers, lovers, squatters, a yuppie too, an occasional tourist. Lots more. I was a regular. I'd usually hung out at the front of the bar on the ledge on top of the radiator. You could look out the window at the street life passing by. With the drug dealers on the corner and the cold winter wind blowing, outside it would be a war zone. The dealers kept up their chants, the litany of pharmaceutical possibility. Loose joints, loose joints, loose joints, loose joints. Methadone, Tylenol, methadone, Tylenol. But inside it was warm sitting on the radiator. One night I went out to make a collect call from the corner. The operator said, "We don't do collect calls from your location. My screen indicates you are calling from a prison. All long-distance calls from the phone are blocked." I held up the phone to the sounds of the street. "Listen," I said, "I'm on a street corner in New York. I'm not in a prison." She finally let the call through. Everyone came through there. There was a scary, tall, east side woman who had mask or veil or face and was emaciated, anorexic. I'd always see her looking masked and haunted like an omen, a silent apparition walking the streets alone. You could only see her eyes. She came in once with a big brown paper-wrapped package. She sat down and unwrapped the brown paper and string. Her family must have sent it to her. She unwrapped it, went through it, and said in the only words I ever heard her speak, and I saw this woman so many times, you know, you wonder about her life. She said, "It's nothing but food." I made up this story about her, that her family knew how fucked up she was, anorexic and lost and haunted, and loved her and wanted to help her, but couldn't and didn't know what to do. They sent her the food. Okay? Anyway, they pretended the place was an artist bar, and every month they had a new art show. They gave the painter 2 free drinks a day, as long as their show was up. That was the story with God. The looming sculpture had been installed for just a short time, as part of an art show, but they kept it up there until the bar closed. They just needed to spray it with insecticide once in a while. It had become infested. It had been created by an artist from Toronto. He had been getting his 2 free drinks every day for years as his payment for creating God. Eventually, he became an alcoholic. He moved back to Toronto. I would sit at the bar and I wonder myself, is that the price you pay for the creation of God? Hey, you know, though, sometimes we had wild times. Once an artist friend and I were cajoled out to Long Island by 2 women offering us Jack Daniels and a good time, which was had by all. They drove us out there, but in the morning we woke up in Long Island trying to figure out how to get the heck back to Manhattan, and they just laughed. The bus we had to take to Long Island Railroad to the subway, it took us 2 hours back. But you know about the place, I mostly just hung out there for the companionship, to cut the loneliness, to act like I had a place to go, a reason to be there. I'd sometimes just sit at the bar and read my stupid poetry, try to get someone to listen to it. Sometimes they did. I still remember this skinny black woman with dreads named Pebbles. I read her my desperately bad poetry. I think that poem was about a giant vacuum cleaner that sucks people in to die. I think she got it. She sang a song to me, quietly, sitting next to me on a bar stool, looking into my eyes. For a moment, it seemed the world had stopped. So one day, I was hanging out at the bar, and Sherry shouts down the bar, "My wallet's gone. The bitch grabbed my wallet." The girl who had stolen the money was slight, dark-haired, spoke with an accent. Sherry followed the thief back into the bathroom, kicked in the door. She pulled her out and started pushing at the girl, and a crowd gathered, and they stripped off all her clothes, looking for the stolen money. So she is standing there, naked, cowering, being pushed, hit, screamed at. All of a sudden, someone noticed her body was covered with purple patches. "Carposi sarcoma! That's AIDS!" someone shouted. "Don't touch her, you could catch it." The crowd went through the girl's knapsack and threw the contents on the floor. I noticed a French-English dictionary. She had been living in New York long enough to catch AIDS and be a junkie, but she still needed work on her English. Sherry never found the money. She said the junkie must have passed it off. Yeah, that's what happened. She was stuck in New York and needed a steal, infected with AIDS and needed to get drugs to cut the pain, and so she got a friend on a deal and passed the money off quickly. That's the way it's done. Well, anyway, the crowd kept humiliating her, sitting at her, standing naked, shaking at the back of the bar. I said, isn't that enough? Finally, they went and let her go. She pulled her scattered possessions together, got her clothes back on, went outside and to the corner. I followed her out. I think this is a part of the story if, like, you're a tough person. You have to say that the person who was humiliated had dignity about her, and she was smiling, maybe laughing with a dealer. She had passed the money off, probably going to buy cracker dope, but I just looked at her with this story going through my head. She looked straight at me, and it wasn't exactly a smile. She said something that sounded like mercy. I guess this woman had come to New York, capital of the world, from France, expecting to find love or sophistication or art. Came in following the beacon into JFK International like a moth, took the wrong path, got infected with AIDS, ended up with dirt junkies and crackheads stealing purses, and eventually would die alone in delirium in a hospital bed for indigents. They eventually closed the bar, moved it down to Houston Street, started having live bands. But I never hung out at the new one, after too long left New York for good. But I wrote this story about the old place. It ends like this. And it took me a long time to write this story. It took me this is the way it happened. It just took a long time to put it down. Anyway, it ends like this. The God of New York hangs over the ceiling of a Lower East Side bar. It is made of paper mache and chicken wire, and at night its dreams are the rats and cockroaches that scuttle through its skull. You guys there? What do you think?
Wow, that's great. Buffalo.
Yeah. It was a hard story to write. I mean, I saw tragic things. That's one of them. It's hard to live through things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's I lived through those days here in New York. I grew up in New York much like King Otho did, and it's definitely changed quite a lot since then, but I remember those days, and I remember those days down in the East Village, which these days more resembles like a Las Vegas version of its old self.
Yes. And you know, probably for the better.
There's always that edge of fire, you know, between the, what it is like, safe to live in, and what is like, you know, the wilderness, and then like the cheap area where it's like all the people who live the way we live for, you know, and every, you know, I mean, they still live that way because people are crazy, number one, and people are artistic and they have to just live to their passion, you know, and there's always like that fiery edge, that like burn area. That it's like it's out there, you know. It's out there right now.
Yeah. But and we're cutting. We've got 8 minutes left. It's time. Time is
less
time,
than 8 minutes.
Less than 8 minutes. And you know, but in the end, what you know, experience like this, it makes me think what a good city does is gives help to people who need. Who need help? Who with social services and housing and all those nice socialist practices, which would be good things for our country.
Mickey Mouse economy.
Yeah.
It seems to be working for I don't know. Somebody here.
So, well, this country was never built well for the workers or the lower classes. It was always built well for those that want to really run their own businesses. If you want to be a business owner, you have fallen into the open-ended arms of the government, who will cradle you softly.
Okay, very good. Okay. Since the time is short, I'm going to try to end with a Portland piece. It's about Eagle Creek. I'm out here. It's there's beautiful things, the mountains and the volcanoes, and I like to go to hike. I go out for hikes, and I think, and this one is for about Eagle Creek. Eagle Creek, one of the best hikes in the Pacific Northwest. From the creek, a slope of cedar and mossy maple, fractured sunlight through tree branches and forest, rise up above creek over moss-coated scree, arch walls of chasms yellow-green. I'm in fascination with cliffside vertical gardens of moss and fern, wildflower and lichen, a complexity within my span. Dark green, gray-green, blue-green, lemon-green, olive-green, moss. Flowers the size of a pin, intensity of blue, white, purple, red. Drops of waterfall glint silver on moss-covered rocks. Bees hover like moving sleep. Curving fronds of black stalk maidenhair ferns, alders, bleeding hearts, columbine, wild iris, wren paintbrush, blue lupine. Few birds here, I don't know why. I have arrived too late for the trillium, and I will not press on to Wattam Lake. I peer into cliffscape, half-lit, half-shadow, look close at one of the mosses that cling to it. I don't know its scientific name. I see yellow dust collected beneath, surmise its spores, odd shade of green unique to itself. Shape, interconnected circles like Venn diagrams, indication of cycles of growth. This patched life has been here many seasons, in sun and rain, covered by snow and convulsive January storm. Under day and night, darkness and light, close touch its life in nature, insects that might gather upon this one bit of moss I circle with thumb and fork finger touched. Next to it another moss, another kind, another fern, cryptogamic flora, a single blue wildflower. I stand back carefully, wary of precipice, and take in all I can. A thousand species of plant and insect, moss and lichen clung to sheer wall, all actual as opposed to art, existing on its own, not for man's purpose, but through and for its own ancient crafts and devices, ascetic secretions, evolved chemistries, symbiosis, contingent history, understood through science and craft, many simply and impossibly unknown. On this steep cliff overlooking chasm and rock and the sky above and the creek tumbling down to great river, the river which travels past my home to the North Pacific. The world spins a great blue ball in space, half light under sun, half darkness under stars. Straight white patches of ash, rock slides, clamber at cliff edge on columnar basalt, bridge over deep narrow chasm, geological fault that pierces the thick layering of volcanic cataclysm. Once the deeps opened and mantled this region with lava, and in contorted layers of time the rock cracked by tension. But I have stayed too late. The inevitable descent will be through darkness. The sun withdraws from the valley, as if with the snapping of a spider strand, a wind-blown arachnid, sprung from connection with tree limbs, spiraling, drifting. The valley and all contained slide with the earth past latched arch angle of sun, spinning all towards vortex of darkness. Limbs of moss-covered trees appear like human figures. The music of the rushing creek, orchestra, inevitable in motion and erosion, forbids deep silence, but darkness will consume the gorge. Deep water turned dark black, foam of streaming luminescent white, in last breath of small light I must return. My narrow path descends deep under cliff ridge of and moonlight. I am immured within cedar and moss. Thank you very much. Thank you, Buffalo, Noah Levin, and Roger Kenny. Good guys.
Thank you kindly. That was beautiful. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on Portland Airwaves and Kabu. This is Pat. Oh, thanks for being on the Portland Airwaves on Kabu 90.7 FM.
Yeah, right on. It was our pleasure.
And quickly, two websites, buffaloreadings.com and my own website, jamzik.com, where I've been doing a lot of experimental portraiture, and you can see my art. I love to do it.
And that's why James is a smarter man than us.
Thanks, James.
Got the plug-in right under the wire, right on.
Oh, jeez.
I also have one announcement. Curtis will have the next Talking Earth show next Monday night. But the 2 weeks from today, on October 1st, Melissa Silito will be here during Pledge Drive. She's also putting poetry up for First Thursday in our Show and Tell Gallery. And if you want to be included, and you guys out in New York, you can actually email her poems and she'll put them up in the gallery in the Everett Street, Everett Station Lofts, downtown Portland. showandtellpdx@yahoo.com. One poem, hopefully just one poem up to two pages. showandtellpdx@yahoo.com. Cool. Thanks everyone. Thanks, Buffalo Poets. Thanks, thanks, James. Gremlin time is approaching.
Thank you all. It's the most 2 a.m. fun I've had in at least several days.
Very good.
Get some sleep, guys. Bye. Bruce.